Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Most school district budgets were approved by New York voters this week. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a deeper look.
David Alpert with the New York State School Boards Association says 97% of New York school budgets were approved.
Typically, the rate is around 98-99%, somewhere in that vicinity. We often see within that, you know, the whole universe of budget votes, there's kind of two different groups. One are the school districts that just need a simple majority, so that means that their budgets were within the tax cap. And then there are a few districts every year that attempt to exceed their tax cap, and they need to get 60% supermajority approval. This year, we had about 32 districts statewide attempt to pierce the cap, and that's out of about 675 districts in the state that have budget votes.
The majority of Capital Region school district budgets passed, but the Bern Knox Westerlo district did not get the supermajority required to pass its $26.3 million budget that required a more than 5% tax hike above the tax cap. The district can pursue another vote in June or pass a contingency budget. Other budgets requiring a supermajority include the Fulton County Village of Northville, which fell short after 59.7% of voters approved a $14.9 million budget and a 6.5% tax levy increase. Voters approved Saugerty's proposed $77.75 million budget with a 4.9% tax levy hike, but failed to override the tax cap by 34 votes. Albert notes that statewide, 32 districts sought such approvals.
If you look at those budgets that required an override, then you're looking at about 68 to 69% passage rate. So it drops down considerably, the passage rate does, once you attempt to override the tax cap. And that's typically because it is that difficult to get to that 60% rate. We see districts get to 58%. They get up there, but they just don't get over that hurdle to get to 60%. So historically, about two-thirds of budgets that attempt to override the cap pass.
More than four-fifths of voters approved the Albany City School District's $326 million budget, with voters also approving the creation of a new capital reserve fund, the purchase of new transportation vans, and the purchase of a parking lot on Spruce Street for employee parking, which the district currently leases. Board of Education member Hassan El-Minyawi, running unopposed, won a new four-year term. Shenandoah voters approved a nearly $214 million budget by a 3-to-1 margin, in addition to approving the purchase of 23 new buses by a similar margin. Three candidates also were on the ballot to fill two empty school board seats, with Mary Colleen Liberty and Carla Thompson chosen. Schenectady voters approved a $277.7 million budget, a bond resolution expanding demolition and reconstruction of part of Kane Elementary School and the sale of a parcel at Van Curler Elementary. In one of the more high-profile Board of Education races, Schenectady School District incumbent Jamaica Miles, a prominent local activist, was elected to a second three-year term. First-time candidate Alexandria Carver earned a first term. Miles posted a short victory statement on social media.
It's not just my win. It is our win. This is a community win. And here's one of the reasons why it's important to acknowledge that. Because I have been unapologetic on my stance for justice. It is a war on injustice. And I do not mince words. I do not placate or try to sidestep and say, well, I'm not going to talk about this because I got to worry about my election. A call for justice is a call for justice. And I still won my seat. Still won my seat.
64% of Niskayuna voters approved the district's nearly $111 million budget, also approving a bus purchase. Ihasui Gomes was elected to a first term on the Board of Education, while Howard Schlossberg won his fourth three-year term. East Greenbush voters okayed a $111 million budget and a $116 million capital project for grounds improvement and the purchase of eight new school buses. In the school board election, Samantha Phillips, Kimberly Turner, and Catherine Van Orden were elected to three-year terms. Catskill Central School District voters approved a $49 million budget and elected four newcomers. Mike Consul, Karen Van Wee, Jeffrey Holliday, and Michael Dedrick to the Board of Education.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Blair Horner, executive director of NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, about climate legislation being negotiated in Albany as the end of session nears.
So there's a lot of things that have to happen, and there's two different major climate initiatives before the legislature in the last couple of weeks. One is what you mentioned, something called the New York Heat Act, which, among other things, eliminates the current utility ratepayer subsidy for the natural gas hookups for people who want to get a natural gas hookup. So Blair Horner has a house. He wants to get connected to the gas main. You, Dave Gustina, pay for me to do that.
Yes.
And so this proposal, among other things, gets rid of that and says, well, if you want it, you have to pay for it, not all ratepayers. And it's about a $200 million fiscal hit in terms of what utility ratepayers have to pay. The second issue is really sort of the infrastructure question. What do you do about needing more air conditioning in schools? What do you need about bridges that get washed away due to storms? What do you deal with? How do you protect lower Manhattan from rising sea levels? All of those costs are enormous. I'll give you one example. Just to upgrade the New York City sewer system to handle more intense storms. It was designed for rainstorms that occurred 100 years ago. That's a $100 billion cost. That's not the MTA. That's not protecting lower Manhattan. That's not dealing with Long Island, which is getting increasingly washed away. That's not dealing with the Great Lakes. You know, that's just the sewer system of the city of New York, $100 billion.
And a lot of these will be billions and billions
of
dollars.
That's right. There's no getting around it. And the public policy of the state of New York is to make the taxpayers pick up the tab. Now, this legislation—
We need a new deal is what we need.
That's right. We need that.
I mean, I'm referencing FDR here. This is the kind of money you need to get this country prepared.
And again, there's no getting around it. Someone has to pay right now. The public policy, particularly in New York, thanks to Governor Hochul, is to make the taxpayers pay. There is legislation that's under consideration, passed the Senate. It has 76 of 101 Democrats as sponsors in the assembly that would make big oil pick up the tab. And yet it's running into, as far as I can tell, problems with the assembly leadership, despite the overwhelming support. And
so what's
budget,
that about? Let me stop you there, Blair. You got super majorities in the legislature. Yeah. You got a Democratic governor and two Democratic leaders of each house, and this can't get done?
Yeah, I mean, it's really sort of amazing, right? I mean, it's passed in the budget. The Senate put it in this proposal in their One House budget bill, and the Assembly had language in their budget resolution, which was consistent with it, although they didn't have the proposal. It didn't happen. So by deduction, who could that be, right? That has to be the governor. So why would the governor not want the oil companies to pick up at least a portion of the tab for all of the tens of billions of dollars that New York taxpayers are on the hook for? I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense to me substantively. It doesn't make any sense to me politically. It's not like we're in Texas. So we're not one of the big oil-producing states in the country. So I don't know what it is. The argument is, well, the cost will be passed on to the public. And we think that that's not true. And we have independent studies to prove it. But it doesn't seem to matter. They did pass Cap and Invest, which is a system of taxing polluters and using that money to sort of re-engineer the state's economy to make it greener. which, by the way, we supported. But that does get passed on to consumers, absolutely, and they supported that. But they're not willing to support something which oil companies, which are ridiculously profitable right now, to pick up some of the tab. And they're responsible because they lied about it for the last four decades about the problem. If we had attacked global warming in 1985, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in today.
Do you have any sense of why people react this way to this?
I mean, it has to be, you know, the lobbying of the bad guys. I'll put the big oil companies in the bad guy category. They are fabulously wealthy. Over the last 3 years, the profits of the big seven are almost $1 trillion profit. So, you know, the whole world is going to be looking for some scratch to pay for the cost of climate change. Why not use their profits and wind down their business model? Because you have to stop using fossil fuels anyway.
Let me ask you a philosophical question. How much of this comes down to people's interpretation of what capitalism means when you start putting rules and regulations on corporations? This is what they always argue. Yeah, the free market. Yeah. But we see what a free market has done to the earth.
Yeah, I know. I mean, people grasp for straws to make arguments that fit into their ideology sometimes. I mean, there is something called a Superfund program right now for toxics that get dumped into the Hudson River or onto the ground. And the idea was make the polluter pay, protect the taxpayer. It's not the taxpayer's fault that someone dumps PCBs into the Hudson River. It's not the public's fault that Exxon is responsible for over 1 billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Yes, we benefited from the products, but in the case of global warming, we were lied to. There were full-page ads run on the New York Times talking about, well, the science isn't clear, chemistry is your best friend. And all of that stuff led to nothing happening. And now we're suffering the consequences with unbelievable heat across the Middle East and India and Africa. The countries that actually had very little to do with global warming are the ones taking it on the chin first.
So how do you have hope?
Well, you know, you have to hope that democracy works. And the only way for that to happen is for people of goodwill to participate and not get cynical. Because if you leave it to just the powerful interest groups to make all these decisions, then the average person gets screwed. And that's not fair.
But we're not having a fair shot at information as much as we used to have. We're seeing what's happening in the social media world and many of the partisan media that's out there in the disinformation campaigns, in other countries hacking us and causing problems, and AI now entering the scene. You're really, when it comes to verified information, we're in a real difficult space as we go forward. And I wonder how much that's going to hurt democracy.
Well, it certainly could. There's no getting around it. Propaganda has been used for a long time to influence elections, and now we have a much more sophisticated way of doing that with deep fake videos, etc.
You can just see the political consultings licking their lips, ready to get a hold of getting their competitors in some deep fake thing scandal.
Yeah, and it definitely will happen and has happened.
Yes.
But it doesn't always work. And what you need is, of course, a free, independent media, both for profit and not for profit, such as WAMC, to call balls and strikes. That's where the system sort of hinges. The cornerstone of democracy is effectively based on getting decent information from unimpeachable sources, and to the greatest extent possible, that should be the media. So that's the challenge.
And it wasn't us. The founding fathers put it in the Bill of Rights.
That's right. And they didn't even know that radio would exist in those days.
No, they had no idea.
So it really matters to the stations, like particularly the public radio stations and public television stations, to make sure that they do that, because they are organized in the public's best interest. And so they have to deliver the goods.
I thought it was interesting that the legislature put a bill through to help local media.
That's right. Well, there is no getting around what's happening. And when you have media deserts, you're much more likely to have people that are relying on the propaganda to make their decisions. And that does erode democracy and increases corruption.
We're speaking with Blair Horner. He's the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. And Blair, as we speak today on May 22nd, 2024, this is your anniversary. 45 years at NYPERG. What were you thinking when you signed up?
I was thinking it would be a one-year thing and that I would go on to do bigger and better things. But like Peter Pan, I continue to be stuck here in my green tights.
I don't think you're aging either. I mean, you just really, you keep this thing going. You stay hopeful, even though everything suggests that the
Everything, David. See, the thing is you can focus on the negative or you can focus on the positive. There are good things that happen. Most people have common sense. Most people want to see the right thing happen. Most people are concerned about the mounting piles of trash that they have to pay for, and that creates problems in their bloodstream and can lead to like heart, cardiac problems. Most people do care about the fact that winter is evaporating and that's going to lead to migration, which has already started. I mean, there's been a drought in Central America that contributes to the mass effort by migrants to come to the United States. All people understand that all those things are happening. And so I have confidence in the common sense of the American people.
That's Blair Horner, executive director of NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As the New York State legislative session draws to a close, a new poll finds support for several items before the Senate and Assembly, including protecting children from harmful algorithms on social media. Governor Kathy Hochul says she's making the issue a top priority. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Siena College pollster Steve Greenberg says in a divided electorate, there's one issue that seems to unite both Democrats and Republicans in New York, and that is support for a ban on social media platform algorithms that feed harmful and addictive feeds to children.
When you get 63% of voters, including majorities of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, to agree on something, you would think your elected officials would listen to that because that's the electorate. That's what the electorate wants.
Governor Kathy Hochul says getting the social media regulation bills passed into law is a top priority for her in the remaining days of the session. She says data shows that use of social media by children and teens is linked to increased rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide.
And this darkness lives on platforms like Instagram, TikTok. These are ruled by addictive algorithms designed to draw the young people deeper and deeper into that darkness over and over.
One of the bills, known as the SAFE Act for Kids, would restrict companies from using the algorithms without parental consent. Another, the Child Data Protection Act, would prohibit online platforms from collecting and sharing children's personal data. Hochul held a news conference with the sponsors of the bills in the Senate and the Assembly. She says she and the legislature are still crafting bill language that could withstand any potential legal challenges. There's been intense lobbying against the measures from big tech companies. The governor could not say, though, whether the votes are there yet to approve the measures.
The momentum is building for this. And we're in the final days just railing support. That's what today is about.
The Siena poll also asked about New York's Equal Rights Amendment. It would enshrine abortion rights and transgender rights into the state's constitution, among other things. The poll finds 2/3 of New Yorkers favor protecting abortion rights, but they're more divided on transgender rights, with 63% of Democrats supporting it and 58% of Republicans in opposition. Independent voters back both provisions, though by smaller margins. Greenberg says overall support for the amendment, though, is strong when they're asked whether or not they would vote for it.
And most of the people come back. So 59% of voters, a clear majority, say they vote yes, compared to only 26% who say they would vote no.
The ERA was slated to be on the ballot this November, but it's currently on hold after a court challenge. Finally, the poll finds opposition to some of the measures proposed this end of session, including an expansion of the state's bottle bill that would double the deposit to 10 cents and add wine and hard cider containers. Voters are also against any climate change fighting measures that could result in higher prices for energy. The New York Heat Act would eliminate ratepayer subsidies for hooking up new gas lines. Opponents say the changes would end up costing utility customers more, something supporters deny. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
New York State officials are asking boaters and floaters to stay safe on the water as the summer recreation season kicks off. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard with that story.
At the Albany Yacht Club in Rensselaer, with boats parked on the Hudson River across from the Albany skyline, the New York State Sheriff's Association urged the public to stay safe this Memorial Day weekend. Craig DeMond is the Delaware County Sheriff and President of the Sheriff's Association. He said everyone on the water, including captains, passengers, and paddlers, should wear a life jacket.
The U.S. Coast Guard statistics show that drowning was the reported cause of 4 out of every 5 recreational boating fatalities. 83% of those who drowned were not wearing life jackets.
Sheriffs from up and down the Hudson River offered safety tips. Juan Figueroa is the Ulster County Sheriff and also an avid boater. He had some advice for younger boaters.
Remember that you're responsible for everyone that's on your vessel as your captain. Don't let anybody put pressure on you to go check the weather, check the currents. Also listen to your fellow boaters that are in the marinas who are more seasoned and may have advice for junior boaters. I can't stress the weather enough, because anything can happen out there at any given time if you're not paying attention to the weather and the currents.
Officials also marked the 5th anniversary of Brianna's Law, a New York boating safety measure named after an 11-year-old girl who died in a 2005 boating accident. The law requires all boaters 46 or younger this year to have a boating safety certificate. Beginning in January 2025, all motorboat operators, regardless of age, will need the safety certificate. Alexi Howland is Director of Marine Services and Recreational Vehicles at New York State Parks. She also serves as New York's Boating Law Administrator.
You can find these courses on our parks website, and they're available both in person and online to increase accessibility. I understand some experienced boaters may feel that this is unnecessary, but I urge you to approach the course with an open mind, and I guarantee you'll either learn something new or it will serve as a great refresher before the start of the season.
The officials noted that the boating season is already active after the mild winter. Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple said it's now several weeks into striper season on the Hudson, and the waterway has been busy.
Last weekend, there had to be 100 boats out here on the river, and in between those boats are people with kayaks and rowing clubs. So, there's a lot of activity out here. Be safe, please. We've had some horrible tragedies in the Capital District in the last several years. We want to prevent that from happening again.
For more information on National Safe Boating Week and the Wear It campaign, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation in February that creates a state commission to plan for the 250th anniversary of the Revolutionary War.
During their first meeting, the panel delved into administrative and procedural necessities and talked about how the New York 250 Commemoration Commission will comply with the goals set in the statute. Acting State Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation Commissioner Randy Simons, the co-chair, said the state is the focal point for the nation's Revolutionary War commemorations.
And it really speaks to the breadth of our history here in New York State and how the stories here shaped our nation. So today will be about laying the foundation for what will be an 8-year-long commemoration, and then obviously talking about the future of the commemoration and what the Rev 250 will do here in New York State.
During its first year, the 250th Commemoration Commission plans to help heritage organizations across the state plan programming to promote events highlighting New York's participation in the American Revolution and the formation of the United States. Saratoga National Historical Park is the site where American troops defeated the British in 1777. Superintendent Leslie Morlock said the National Park Service is looking at the commemoration as an opportunity to raise awareness.
For those of you may not be familiar, we protect 5 locations: the Saratoga Battlefield, the Saratoga Monument, Surrender Site, Victory Woods, and General Philip Schuyler's House. We protect approximately 3,500 acres, and it is at this location where the Americans fought the British and ultimately won, and the British surrendered. And it really was a turning point, taking the Revolutionary War towards the side of the Americans. Saratoga National Historical Park is looking to use this momentum and the upcoming 250th commemorations to build lasting efforts that will stretch beyond 2026 and 2027 to elevate our visibility as an important stop in understanding the early American and how it resonates into our modern interests.
The Clinton County Historical Association was represented by Lake Champlain Maritime Museum Director Emeritus Art Cohn, who talked about the history of the lake during the Revolutionary War. He focused on the gunboat Spitfire, which sank when the Americans retreated after the Battle of Valcour Bay on October 11, 1776. Cohn told the panel how a survey team found the gunboat on the lake bottom in 1997.
As I speak to you today, this boat sits on the bottom of Lake Champlain. That bow cannon is still in place. The interior is filled with mud, preserving what we believe are thousands of artifacts that arrived on this lake bottom in the middle of the night on October 12th, 1776. It's a moment frozen in time, and there's a record there that will add potentially huge amount of information about this event and about the people who participated in it. The mast is still standing full height. It's really extraordinary to have a boat in this kind of condition.
When it was first discovered, the best preservation method for the Spitfire was to leave it on the bottom of the lake where the cold water protects it. But Cohn said zebra mussels are now a threat, and he hopes the commission can help their efforts to raise and restore the historical artifact.
The mussels will dissolve the iron fastenings holding this boat together. It will not stay intact over time. And so we are recommending this boat be recovered whole, have it brought to a pre-built conservation laboratory to do the many years of conservation this boat will need, an environment that is also accessible to the public.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2421 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.